Okay, well, I think I've drawn the short straw, really, because I think it's pretty impossible to follow Sam's presentation and to follow Sam's film, although I'll do my best. Although, actually, interestingly, I think there are quite a few connections in... I could make a few modest connections between my own work and Sam's, particularly my focus on children, our focus on children. Our concern with the testimonies of children and the capacity of children to provide, I think, useful and informative information about their lives, that knowledge that we can find useful, that children are capable of providing interesting and perceptive testimonies, as well as the resilience of children who live under particularly difficult situations, as well as my own or our own much more modest commitment to the use of film, in our case still images, as a way of knowing and understanding the lives of children. So what I'm going to do in my presentation today really is to talk a little bit about some work I've been doing in Ghana, in Accra, since 2004. My presentation is a joint presentation. Since that time, I've worked with a collaborator, a colleague and a friend, Yao Fusukusi, who received his doctorate from the University of Warwick in 2002, who went back to Ghana and who now is head of social studies at the University of Education in Winneba. Yao sends his greetings to you all. What I want to do in the time that I've got available today is to discuss elements of my work, just particularly, or our work, particularly focusing on two areas. I'm just going to kind of briefly comment on kind of a methodological aspect of our work, and that is the use of film, this time still images, as a way of knowing and understanding children's lives, but also to connect that to something that we've kind of been working on over the past year or two, a substantive or an element of our substantive findings, which is the way in which we've looked at how children evolve and create forms of cooperation around friendships and forms of cooperation that seem to have quite an important role to play in how they manage lives which are played out or lived out in terms of significant and acute difficulties. So I said I've been working in Ghana since about the beginning of 2004 with Yao, and we've worked on two interrelated projects. First one was kind of a project which lasted for about three and a half years, which was a qualitative study of children living and working on the streets of central Accra. We called it Street Life as Labour. One of the largest NGOs working with street children in Accra, Catholic Action for Street Children, its headcount, the latest headcount, the findings from its latest headcount estimated there are around 15,000 kids who live and work on the streets of Accra. I'm not talking about the children who go home at night to families, but those children who actually eke out a living and sleep each evening on the streets of central Accra. A more recent kind of development of that interest in urban childhood and the emergence of new categories of being an urban child, we've pursued that through an interest in children living in a large informal settlement in central Accra, a slum. I'll use that term. It's a very problematic term, but I think I'll use it for the time being. At the beginning, at the end, to the middle to the end of 2008, for about 9 months, we worked with a small group of children who live in a large, this large informal settlement right in the heart of, right very close to the central business district in Accra. Old Fadama, or Sodom and Gomorrah, it's often referred to, where we spent 9 months following these children, a group of six children. Our research, like Sam, as Sam said, our research is concerned with documenting the lives of poor children, some of probably the poorest children in sub-Saharan Africa. And there's quite a bit written about children and children in sub-Saharan Africa, and what we're very much interested in is what these children can tell us about their lives. So a lot of the writings, as far as we can see, on children, there are a lot of assumptions that are made about how children live their lives and their experiences that we come to know about children's lives often through the testimonies of adults. Parents, policymakers, professionals, often operating on the basis of some sense of the best interests of the children is self-evident, it's transparently clear. And what we've found in talking to children, in taking seriously the capacity of children living in really, really difficult situations, that actually they'll define their best interests, what they seem to see as their best interests, in terms which are significantly different from the assumptions that we often make about them and the lives that they lead. We also work within an idea of kind of childhood normality as concealing zones of violence. We follow some anthropologists, Pamela Reynolds and Vina Das, who talk about childhood. The normality of childhood is comprised of zones of violence, which one extreme are about children caught up in conflict and war and the militarization of children, through to children who exist in gangs and criminal activities, right through to children who live in the extremities of everyday poverty and violence. And we're interested in how children living in those zones of violence are actively involved in the recreation of their daily lives, in managing the situations in which they find themselves, in developing survival strategies, often in small ways, is transcending or surmounting the circumstances in which they find themselves. We're interested again to follow some of the writings of another American anthropologist, Nancy Shepherd Hughes, who talks about the need to kind of complement theories of human trauma with theories of human hardiness, the kind of sometimes incredibly impressive capacity of human beings, adults and children, to survive under conditions of acute distress and difficulty. In a recent paper, we kind of tried to articulate some elements of that within terms of the talent for living that children often display. We're ethnographers. I won't say anything more about that, and we follow kind of traditional ethnographic practice, but we have introduced, right from the very beginning, a visual element to what it is that we do. As well as observations, testimonies, interviews and discussions, the sorts of things that ethnographers routinely do as part of their ethnographic practice, we've become interested in photography, children's photography, the handing over of the means to make images to children. In our case, those really cheap, single-use film cameras that you take with a flash unit, try and have fast film if possible, and we ask children who participate with us to make photographic accounts of their lives, and then to use those photographs as a basis of carrying on our ethnographic dialogue, to organise discussions and interviews around the pictures that the children make. I'm interested in one element of photography, is the capacity to communicate often what is hidden. And I've just put up, this is a tiny little example. It's a Google map of central Accra, and most of our research has been taken in the Ring Road, taken place within the Ring Road, which kind of starts there and goes right round to the other side. And I said more recently we've become interested in children who live in this large informal settlement in the middle of Accra. And from this map, you'd have absolutely no idea that it exists. Just above the Corley Lagoon there, it's a 2 kilometre square piece of land, which, actually, if we look at a satellite photograph of it, is home to anywhere between 25,000 to 40,000 people. It's hard to say. There was a head count a couple of years ago, but as a census, but it's very difficult to say. And so some of our more recent research has been working with a sort of small group of children who live in this informal settlement, bang smack in the middle of central Accra. The banks are just kind of over there, the central business district. It's a settlement that's been faced with the prospect of resettlement over the past 6 or 7 years that seems to run into the ground. There was they've gone through the legal procedures to remove this settlement, but it's kind of sort of run into the ground. I haven't quite found out what the current situation was. Last thing I heard, the High Court had upheld a decision to actually remove this settlement of up to 40,000 people out to the outskirts of Accra. And we've just been working. The only school that we can find within this kind of runs through the side of the lagoon, down the river, another side. There's one school. There's no public schools in there because the Accra Metropolitan Authority, if they put in a school in there, then it starts to grant a legitimate right to settlement. So they're loath to do it. They kind of give them some textbooks, the school that we've been working with. As far as we see, there's one school. It's a private school, church-based school, and it's just kind of top right-hand corner that actually we've started to do some of our work. As I said, I'm interested in photography. I'm interested in photography as ways of creating dialogues or allowing different forms of dialogues with children, a way for them to kind of express their experiences, to prioritise those things that are important, as a way for us to know more about the lives of these children. And I wanted to make a connection between that methodological interest and actually something that we started to actually realise and appreciate which hitherto we hadn't been aware of in terms of our work with these children. Particularly around the friendship and the importance of friendship. Friendship, it's certainly in terms of the proliferation of a literature around street children, is never spoken of, or hardly ever spoken of. That actually life on the street is violent, competitive, self-interested, a kind of Hobbesian nightmare, if you like, a free-for-all, a Hobbesian. And that there are clearly, unequivocally, true elements to this. What is street life is never written about in terms of friendship, or very rarely written about in terms of friendship and the importance of friendship to children. And for us, it starts to become really obvious because it's hardly ever do you come across one street child by themselves. They're always in groups of two, three, four, sometimes bigger. And this started to get us thinking about, well, what it is about these groups which are quite significant and interesting. So there is a little bit written about the affective value of these friendships, the kind of emotional support that children leaving independent lives gives to one another, kind of peer forms of socialisation. They seem to us quite important to acknowledge and endorse that point, as well as this kind of narrow economic unit. But what we found as we started to get to grips with this was, I think, something which was much more interesting. Certainly it was to us. And it was this photograph, in a way, which kind of started it all. We give out the cameras to kids, we ask them to come back the next day, and we have very, very basic instructions. We show them how to work it, we take a photograph of them, okay, and we ask them to make an account of a day in their lives. Okay, that's simple, the instructions, no more than that. And this is one of the photographs that come back to it. I will read this, actually, just because I want to just read that. It's not conventional in my discipline to read out a paper, okay, but I do want to just read this little bit that I've written about it. Picture this, four children, their ages difficult to tell, are laid out on matting across a doorway. Beyond them, it is possible that there are other companions, but in the dimness of the photograph's periphery, it is impossible to tell. The darkness circling these subjects nevertheless reinforces what is otherwise clearly evident, that this is an image of sleeping children. All are clothed to some degree, but their dirty stained garments, bare feet and lack of visible possessions allude to a sparse existence. An arrangement neither neat nor pleasant, it is one nonetheless that exudes design and purpose. The sleeping mat, a discarded sleeping cloth, makeshift pillow, a just visible water sachet, the parallel sleeping positions, each of these provides a clear sign of intent. Less obvious, but no less significant, is a physical connectedness that binds these sleeping children together. The child closest to the photographer, a boy, lies with the sole of his left foot against the top of the foot of the second closest child, a boy, who in return rests his upper right arm against the first child's torso. The first and third closest child, a girl, are united by touching elbows just above the head of the second child. The last visible child, a girl, embraces the back of the third child in the crook of her bent right leg, while her left leg bends backwards to also hold close her sleeping companion. Four children asleep in the doorway, the physical connection to one another, a suggestion of something greater. So it's photographs like that that got us thinking about how children come together on the street. I won't read this out, a similar spiel for this one, but this is another photograph. There's lots of photographs of food and of street children sharing food. And again, there's kind of like a symmetry to this photograph. There's almost a kind of like element of harmony, a harmonious ethos, I think, to this photograph as well. And again, we'd make a similar point about cooperation and friendship. We got to thinking about this in terms of writings by anthropologists about friendship as ways that people create durable economic relations, ways of doing business in a context where formal market mechanisms, contract don't exist, and blood ties have diminished. Okay? And that the argument is that friendships provide durable relations in the absence of those other ways of enforcing associations between people. We kind of like elements of that. But our argument was and is that actually it's not the absence of market relations through which we can understand the forms of friendship and cooperation that these children develop. It's because of the presence of particular market forms, in particular the valorization of particular market forms through the expansion of the informal economy in central Accra. And what we've done is we've tried to tease out, and we have teased out, the existence of a very strong sensibility of the reciprocal amongst these children, an ethos of shared being, of commonality, of cooperation, of mutuality. And this is very much evident in our dealings with these children and very much evident in the children's dealings with each other. Friends, for instance, are described as found, okay? And there is an element of serendipity. Many of these children are independent migrants. They come from the northern areas, often by themselves. They arrive alone. They talk about finding friends. There's that serendipitous element of finding friends. But unpacking that, we found that it actually masks a kind of a nexus of mutual exchange, one that we've described in terms of relations between children characterized by asking one another for help, giving one another help, and receiving help from friends around them. Friends are those who are prepared to enter into cooperative relations. We've charted that sensibility of the reciprocal through kind of concrete points. I'll give you just some idea here. Around points which are crucial to these children's social reproduction. In terms of sleep, how they cooperate in terms of their sleep. The example that I've just given you and what I've read out, as well as here's another one, tented living. It's a kind of very cooperative way of sleeping on the pavement, using old fertilizer sacks as a way of keeping the mosquitoes, the rain, and the prying attention of strangers away from you. Particularly important for girls. We've teased it out in terms of reciprocal relations around food, that you will share your meal with somebody today because perhaps tomorrow or the day after you will be hungry and they will share it with you. So we've teased out that. We've teased it out around work. Okay, the daily struggle to find work and an income in order to be able to feed themselves. And we've seen that we've tried to tease out the cooperative elements that are involved between friends in the organisation and distribution of work, which itself is a daily struggle to find. We've also tried to tease it out in terms of sickness and ill health, the way in which friends support each other and help to maintain one another when malaria strikes or those frequent bouts of diarrhoea are particularly debilitating, or when you need to trip to the clinic or the hospital or to fetch drugs or just simply to sit by you while you're poorly, to be with you. We've teased it out in those terms too. And finally, my final point really is we've kind of tried to make sense of these in terms of an inclusive childhood. Terrible conditions in which these children live, but actually through their creativity and innovative, they've developed ways of living in response which can be characterised to some extent by elements of inclusiveness. A kind of shared way of living which is open to all, which is particularly important. It is open to all. It's the strangers, the new arrivals into town. These ways of living as children under really difficult circumstances are open to all comers. And we see this as, to some extent, a defence against the valorisation, and to some extent, because they're non-marketised forms of exchanges between children, to some extent, the transcendence of that formal economy which kind of dominates many aspects of these children's lives.